Never heard of it, never heard of it.
The Chief Justice is recused in this case, and Justice Miller Lerman, as the senior associate justice, would ordinarily resign. Justice Miller Lerman?
Yes, good morning. This is Justice Miller Lerman. The case has been called for guardianship of Hasenauer. As Justice Castle has indicated, the chief is recused. Ordinarily, I would preside. We're having quite a few technical difficulties this morning, and I will instead defer to Justice Castle, who will undertake to preside. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Miller Lerman. Counsel, thank you for appearing this morning. Thank you for maintaining your masks and social distancing. We ask that you continue to do that during the hearing this morning, except when you are presenting your argument. When you are speaking to us, please remove your mask so that we can hear and understand you. At the conclusion of the argument, we will ask that you continue to wear your masks and social distance and use the side door near the dark monitor to exit courtroom. To a degree, we've perhaps already introduced ourselves. As you can see, there are four judges of the court who are present in the courtroom, and two, Justice Miller Lerman and Justice Funk, are appearing by WebEx, and we have rearranged the monitor so that you can sort of see them from the podium if they have a question to ask you. I should also point out that because of our technical difficulties, the microphones that are at the podium are not the operative microphone. The little device that's sitting in front of Justice Papik next to the camera contains the microphone, so it's important that you speak up so that that microphone can relay what you say to the justices who are not present but are participating via WebEx. With all of those explanations, do either of the lawyers have any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Very well. Mr. Stecker, you may approach and proceed when you are ready.
Thank you, Howard. My name is Joe Stecker. I represent John and Rhonda Hasenauer in this matter. We're here today because Nicholas Hasenauer suffers from schizophrenia. Nicholas is delusional. He sees reality in ways that you and I do not see reality. Oftentimes, based on his expectations, based on his unrealistic view of the world, his expectations do not become fulfilled. Given that, he oftentimes reverts to aggression because of his frustration. John and Rhonda Hasenauer love their son very dearly. In April of 2016, the public guardian was appointed guardian for Nicholas Hasenauer. They worked in that capacity until December of 2019. Prior to December 19, the public guardian had filed a motion for discharge of their responsibility as public guardian.
Let me ask you, Mr. Stecker, if the guardian were anyone else in the world other than the Office of the Public Guardian, would you have any dispute that such an officer would be entitled to ask the court to be relieved of their responsibilities?
No, sir, I would not. And you know, that is part of the issue with the parent being appointed guardian. They filed objections with the court. Nevertheless, the court appointed them guardians.
And of course, they haven't accepted. And if they don't accept, they'll never end up being, the court won't force them. Can't.
I don't think the court can force them. And if they were a private citizen, if they wished not to remain as guardian, I think the court would have to relieve them of their responsibilities. But the public guardian statutes create a different scenario. Under the public guardian statutes, the public guardian has to present an option to the court, a real option.
Well, isn't that the heart of this case?
It is.
The extent to which the legislature has imposed limitations on the office of public guardian that either expressly or de facto do not provide the level of service that your clients would desire to be provided.
That is correct. The statute specifically provides that the public guardian cannot just say, I don't want to do this anymore. They have to provide to the court an option, a real option, for the appointment of a new public guardian, as the statute says, so there's no lapse in services.
So they have to move an additional public guardian west of North Platte. Is that your argument?
Whatever they have to do, I think they could appoint an associate public guardian from a private office, from an attorney in Scott's Bluff. That's where this issue started from, or anywhere else.
Suppose that I don't think the record in this particular instance addresses the money involved in appropriations to the Office of Public Guardian. But we're not here just on this case, but on every case that could be likely. And if the money were exhausted and the Office of Public Guardian said, we don't have any appropriations to provide a level of service to this particular ward, are you arguing that somehow the court could force the Office of Public Guardian to do so anyway?
I think the public guardian, once they are appointed, has that responsibility. It's not like a private person who can say, we don't want to do this anymore. It's a public service.
So the answer to my question
is
yes. Yes.
Yes, the answer is yes. And I would refer back to a county attorney's office. County attorney has a responsibility to prosecute every crime they reasonably believe can be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. The statutes mandate that. Section 23-1201 says the county attorney has to do that. He can't say, I don't have enough deputies in my office to fulfill those obligations.
Now, here, the legislature has provided caseload limitations in statute, right?
That they provided statutes which can provide, I mean, they do, they set out, they set forth, the public guardian has only enough resources to do so much.
Do those caseload restrictions come into play when the OPG, at the beginning of the appointment process, if you will, or at the end, when we're talking about whether the Office of Public Guardian may be discharged properly under the provisions of 30-4117.
I don't think the public guardian can be dispatched properly under those regulations in this case.
In other words, could, I guess I didn't ask my question very well, could under the provisions of 30-4117, could the Office of Public Guardian go to the county court judge and say, please discharge us, our services are still necessary, but we haven't the resources. Does the law permit the OPG to do that?
No. That is our position. No, it cannot. That provision only takes effect when the person, this interested person, the ward, doesn't need a guardian anymore.
So what do you suggest is meant by the phrase, the public guardian can make a motion to be discharged when it appears that the services of the public guardian are no longer necessary? What does that mean?
That means the person no longer needs a guardian.
Does it also perhaps mean that there is someone else available and willing to serve?
Well, yeah, and in that case, you know, there are parts of the statute that clearly says that if another person is found and public guardian comes forward with the court and says, we have someone who is willing to take on this responsibility, they can file the motion, and that new person is appointed guardian, if that person is willing to accept, and as the statute says, so there is no lapse in services.
Do you read the phrase, I beg your pardon, sir, you read the phrase with respect to no longer necessary to encompass both situations, for example, where the ward is no longer in need of services, and or perhaps another guardian, not of the public nature, has become available. Is that what no longer necessary means?
Yeah, I agree, and that is correct. That's our position. You have, as the court knows, as it's clear in case law, you have to read the statute as a whole. You can't just pick and choose. And that phrase says, when another guardian is found and they can be appointed, it has to be so that there is no lapse in services. And in here, we had a complete lapse because the court appointed someone who was completely unwilling to accept the guardianship. That was their right. They live up in Rapid City. They both have health issues, and you can see from the transcript or from the bill of exceptions.
Is there no person or entity acting as a guardian at this point?
And that is correct.
Yeah. So who has been responsible for Mr. Hasnauer's housing and medical care, and who's been his?
There has been no one legally that has been responsible for that. The parents have made efforts that they have. It's tough for them. John, his father, had brain surgery this summer, a tumor removed from his brain. He's not even eligible to drive yet at this time. And they live up in Rapid City, so they have tried. They love their son very dearly. They really do. But they cannot handle this situation. The public guardian had the responsibility. The public guardian was the guardian. The public guardian was the guardian. The young lady that was handling the situation as an associate public guardian had perfect reasons not to want to remain in that capacity. There had been issues between Nicholas and her, and they were legitimate. But someone, and the public guardian was appointed. She wasn't appointed as his guardian. The public guardian had the responsibility to fulfill their responsibilities, and they simply filed a motion to be relieved. There was no option for the court to appoint someone who was going to accept it, and the public guardian should have remained and still should remain as Nicholas's guardian.
Is it his and our position that they are capable of fulfilling this position, or
who would it be? Who is?
The parents.
The parents filed objections. Their objections were based on their past history as serving as guardians for Nicholas. He was aggressive towards both of them. They could not handle the situation anymore. So are they incapable of doing it? Living up in Rapid City and having a guard in Scott's Bluff is very difficult for anyone to handle that. But they had reasons not to to agree to be Nicholas's guardians.
So the record would show that they simply just want your objection to the appointment. There is no record showing incapability.
No, I don't think there's record showing that they are totally incapable. Obviously, I say both of them have health issues. They both live in Rapid City. That's over 300 miles from Scott's Bluff.
I know that is.
Yeah, you do. Okay. So they are. Could they do it? I think it would be a real strain for them. I really do. But the bottom line is, no one can force them to do it. And the court, you know, specifically said at page 100 of the Bill of Exceptions, Nicholas declared, Nicholas, addressing Nicholas, your parents are now your guardian.
Is it fair to say that if we boil this dispute down, it comes down to two questions, as I see it. One, who is to find and replace a guardian, either the office of the guardian or those who care about the ward, And the second question being, who paid for that guardian?
I think the issue is, under the statutes, the public guardian has the obligation to provide a option for a new guardian if they choose to opt out of the guardianship. I think it's clear from the statutes, that's the responsibility of the public guardian.
And who would hold financial responsibility thereafter, under your argument?
Well, the public guardian, you know, is financed, and they're going to have to figure out who's going to provide for that compensation, if any, for that.
Did the county court make a finding about the capacity of your clients to serve as guardian?
I do not believe so.
Is there an implicit finding by appointing them that he found that they were capable?
I don't believe there's an implicit finding there at all. In fact, again, on the Bill of Exceptions on page 100 or 101, the court, you know, instructed Nicholas, when the court is addressing Nicholas, that he should not cause any kind of concern for his parents' welfare. I mean, the court was even concerned about that situation to begin with, but nevertheless appointed the parents as guardian anyway.
Are there any further questions by the court? Hearing none, do you have a number of how long we took Mr. Stecker over time?
Yes, Your Honor, 3 minutes and 48 seconds. Over.
3 minutes and 48 seconds. We'll add that on to the appellee's time. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, James Campbell on behalf of the Office of Public Guardian. The lower court reasonably resolved what it called a very difficult situation with no great options on the table. It correctly concluded that it could not allow the Office of Public Guardian to continue in its role because Nicholas's incessant threats undermine his best interests as well as the well-being of the Office of Public Guardian staff.
What does our record tell us about the capacity or the technology available to the other associate public guardians in Nebraska, those living east, if you will, of the associate public guardian who was serving Mr. Hasenauer?
Sure. The only record evidenced on this is around page 25 of the Bill of Exceptions, and it's the associate public guardian, which is Ms. Rotterham. She testified that due to case limitations, due to geographical limitations, that there was no one else available in the office who could serve in this role.
But her. She served the entire Western Capital.
Correct.
But what do we know about the capacity of the remaining 13 or 14 associate public guardians?
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record on that.
Is that important for us to know to make a determination about whether these services of the public guardian are no longer necessary?
I don't believe it is. I think first and foremost, the court should decide whether it is in the best interest of Mr. Hasenauer and of Nicholas to withdraw the Office of Public Guardian. And that's
the entire office or the associate public guardian with whom? Who's having significant difficulty.
I think it's both questions, and I think they go hand in hand. And one of the things I would point the court to in particular is the finding of fact by the county court that the same relationship problems that existed between this particular associate public guardian and Nicholas would inevitably result with someone else in the office. He made a finding of fact on that at page 99 of the Bill of Exceptions, and we think it's supported by competent evidence. Not only is it supported by competent evidence that includes the threats that were established that Nicholas made to the Office of Public Guardian staff, but it was also established by concessions below by both the parents and Mr. Hasenauer, specifically Nicholas's attorney. They all of them acknowledged during the hearing that the same problems that existed between Mrs. Rotterdam and Nicholas were likely to result if someone else from the office were to step into that same, the same position. And so,
why would it be different for the, somebody else in the office or the guardian or any other guardian who's appointed?
Well, I think one of the concerns that the parents raised was that they too would be in a position where you know, they would object because of their son's aggressive behavior. But they previously served as his guardian, and they did so successfully for a period of time. And also, there was no record established below indicating that they faced the kind of threats that the Office of Public Guardian did.
So your position that the county court will force them to be a guardian?
No, Your Honor, it's not. That's not our position, and we don't think that's what the county court did.
How long would you have the court wait to see whether the parents accept the appointment? If they continue not to accept the appointment, and Mr. Hassenauer continues to have no one assisting him, how long is the court supposed to wait?
I think it's reasonable to wait until this appeal is resolved, but once the appeal is resolved, I think the court should act on that. And so,
what are the court's options?
I think the court's options are at least two.
Not this court.
Sure.
The county court.
I think at least twofold. One is it could look to see if there are other individuals available to serve as the successor guardian.
Couldn't hold the parents in contempt for not accepting the guardianship request.
Your Honor, I suppose that could be an option. I'm not sure that the county court could actually force them to serve in the guardian role. And so I'm not sure that that's an option.
Would you agree that the way the statutory scheme has been put together for the Office of Public Guardian, that assuming the Office of Public Guardian has the capacity, that office can be forced to accept a guardianship even if it doesn't want?
I think that potentially is true, Your Honor. I think it could be forced. Now, in the circumstances of this case, where the best interest of the ward clearly established that the existing arrangement has to be severed, I think that takes precedence. But initially, to your question, I do think that the Office of Public Guardian can be forced to take a guardianship, even if they object to it initially. However, once the facts show that this is not in the ward's best interest, and that this is jeopardizing the safety and well-being of the Office of Public Guardian staff, at that point, there's ample statutory authority for the county court to step in and take the existing action.
Do you think the county court made an implicit finding that Mr. Stecker's clients were capable, the parents were capable?
I think so. That is implicit in finding that they were suitable guardians. And certainly the county court looked at their relationship with their son. County court looked at the fact that they had previously served in this role. County court expressly said that they knew their son's mental health struggle better than anyone. And so they were in the best position to help them. And so I do think that it's implicit in his appointment of them that he thought that they were capable of doing this.
Implicitly found that they were suitable. Was it clear to the court that they were not willing? Clear from the objection and from the statements they made all throughout the trial and after the court had appointed them. They asked immediately, how do we appeal?
Your Honor, I think it's clear that they objected once their first choice was that the Office of Public Guardian stay in that position, and they objected to the office being removed and them being put in there. But I think it wasn't clear what they would do once the Office of Public Guardian was discharged. At that point, they were forced with the decision, which is, are we going to allow a potential lapse in the guardianship, or are we going to step in and take that on ourselves? So I think it's reasonable.
They allowed the lapse. Have they not?
They have. But it was also, again, the county court faced a difficult situation. He tried to navigate the best he could. And in giving them, appointing them, but yet giving them the option to accept it, he was essentially encouraging them to do it, saying he thought they were suitable, capable, and they clearly were available because they were so heavily involved in Nicholas's guardianship throughout the whole process. He was encouraging them to take it. If they decide not to, then I think the county court has to go back to the drawing board, see if there's another suitable replacement, or at this point, enough time has passed that perhaps a full guardianship isn't necessary anymore.
The county court seemed to assume that having conditionally appointed the parents, that it was their responsibility to offer up, if you will, a successor guardian. Do you agree that is what is contemplated by the statutory scheme?
I don't know that that's contemplated by the statutory scheme. I think it's a reasonable request. And if you look throughout the discussion at the hearing, specifically on page 8, Nicholas himself was asked how he wanted to proceed. And he said, while he had consistently said previously that he wanted his parents to be his guardian, he was changing his position. And he thought that if he had more time, he could find someone else to be a replacement. And so he seemed to indicate that he could find someone. But as to your precise question, which is, do the statutes contemplate that there's a duty on a subsequent guardian to find their own replacement? I don't think that's in the statutes.
Does our record tell us who originally petitioned for the appointment of a guardian for the senate?
I don't believe the record tells us that. Yes, I don't think that's in there. Certainly, for the county court to appoint someone as a successor guardian over their objection is something that you don't see a lot. But I think there are 4 unique circumstances of this case that justify it under this situation. The first point is that, as I mentioned before, the county court didn't require the parents to serve, but simply appointed them and gave them the opportunity to accept. Secondly, the parents were actively involved in Nicholas's guardianship. The record shows that they contacted the Office of Public Guardian over 190 times throughout the 3.5-year period, which is an average of once a week. They were actively involved. Frankly, they were effectively acting as a de facto co-guardian at that point. 3, the parents had actively undermined the Office of Public Guardian's role. And the record shows that in, I believe it was December of 2017, they helped Nicholas find an attorney and file a petition to have the office discharged. So when you have all of these factors, when you have them actively involved, showing they're clearly available, actively undermining what the Office of Public Guardian is trying to do, and ultimately they're given the choice, we think that under these circumstances, it is reasonable for the county court to do what it did, which is to make sure that the Office of Public Guardian is discharged and to appoint the parents as a successor. One other fact that's important to keep in mind is that the court didn't just appoint anyone to be the successor guardians, it appointed his parents. And parents have a common law duty to care for their kids that extends beyond into adulthood if that child is suffering from physical or mental disability.
Is it also true that the court wasn't provided any other options? And the specific question was asked of the Office of Public Guardian, did you look for anyone other than the parents? And they said no.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's what the record shows. But they did, throughout the 3.5 years that they were his guardian, did have a ongoing statutory obligation to find a replacement. And that's an obligation that exists on the Office of Public Guardian consistently. And in light of that, in light of the fact that they had 3.5 years where they had this ongoing duty and they couldn't find anyone, I think it's reasonable for the county court to say, this is a volatile situation with the Office of Public Guardian. We need to move on and try something else. This is not working. And so the court's hope was that the parents would step up and take on the task. And if they don't, then the next step is to find someone else that could replace them, or to, again, reassess whether a full guardianship is even necessary.
I have not read the Bill of Exceptions. Help me. What does the record show that the Office of Public Guardian did to try to find someone other than its own personnel and other than the parents?
There's nothing in the Bill of Exceptions, other than what Justice Stacey said. The one thing that I haven't talked about yet is the standing issue. We would encourage the court that we don't believe the parents have appellate standing because they haven't shown that they're aggrieved by the order they're appealing. As to the part of the order that discharges the Office of Public Guardian, that only affects Nicholas's rights as ward. It doesn't affect the parents.
As parents, are they in the nature of a next friend or their son, even if they're not acting as his guardian?
I don't believe they are. Given that he is now an adult, I don't think that they have that legal role as an next friend.
With the same obligation you were talking about earlier to care for Nicholas into adulthood bear on standing?
Potentially it could, Your Honor. I don't think it does, because they're not purporting to appeal as Nicholas's next friend. And so for that reason, I don't think it impacts it. And just to finish the point on standing, as to the portion of the order that appoints the parents as successor guardians, they're not injured by that either, because they're not required to accept the appointment. And so it's our position that there simply is an appellate standing under the circumstances.
The record tells us that Nicholas has had a court-appointed guardian ad litem since the beginning, and I see nothing with respect to that court-appointed guardian ad litem appearing at the hearing in the record. No briefing on appeal. What's happening now?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. I was surprised by that as well. I know that as I've reviewed this case file, the guardian ad litem was involved initially in putting together an initial report, and I haven't seen much involvement from the guardian ad litem since then. Perhaps that's another opportunity for the county court to explore other options. In other words, by perhaps bringing in the guardian ad litem and getting additional opinions, that might be another way that the lower court can find a way through this very difficult situation. Unless I see my time's up, unless anyone has further questions.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thank Campbell. You. How much time did we allow Mr. Campbell to go over?
49 seconds.
Mr. Stecker, you have 49 seconds to rebuttal.
My only rebuttal here would be on the issue of standing. Again, if you refer to the exceptions on page 100, the court specifically said, Nicholas, addressing Nicholas, your parents are now your guardian. The court also stated on page 101 that there was nothing else for this case today. Obviously, there was something else in his journal entry, but he declared there was nothing else when he made the judgment.
What else was in the journal entry?
There was a journal entry that indicated that the parents had a certain number of days to respond to the court's order to start the process of becoming guardians, going through the statutory requirements that are now set forth if you're going to be a guardian of someone. So, but there was nothing in his decision. The only other comment I would make is for the court and for those that cannot see that I was wearing a white mask and my learned colleague was wearing a black mask. Thank you.
Thank you. All time has expired. The cause is submitted. Council will please resume wearing their masks and exit by the side.